It's that time of the year again when your nice hosts take a few weeks off. The show will be back with new episodes next week. But this week, we're airing one more of our favorites from 2024. This week's Nice Replay is episode 373, Puzzle Systems with Arvi Hempeli-Tikari, originally published November 15th, 2024. I chose this interview for a Nice Replay because not only did we have a great conversation with Arvi about puzzle systems, we also just had a blast hanging out together and with his cats. Pretty sure we could have just kept talking like for another hour or two, except it was really, really late in Finland already, and we didn't want to keep him anymore.
That's something I forgot about that episode is it was pretty late.
Well, we kept saying, "Are you sure you don't have to go?" And he's like, "No, I'm having a good time."
Yeah,
which is the greatest endorsement a guest can give the program, I think.
Really.
If you haven't seen the show notes for this episode, there's pictures of the cats.
Check that out.
Yeah. But also listen to this episode because it's very good.
That's very good. I hope we can have him again on the show again in the near future. Mm-hmm. All right. So, like I said, the show will be back next week, starting with our annual What We Did on Our Winter Break episode. While you wait, you can listen to this Nice Replay, and you can listen to other Nice Replays, and you can listen to all our episodes ad-free, plus exclusive bonus audio that's pretty nice, too, at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. From Noble Robot on East Hennepin Avenue in confounding Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club. I'm Ellen Burns-Johnson, and I make nice games.
I'm Stephen McGregor, and I make nice games.
I'm Martha Croy. I, too, make nice games.
And I'm Arvi, and the notes here say I aim for global world domination. I also make games that are hopefully nice.
You can do both. In this episode, we're going to talk with our evil mastermind, Arvi, a.k.a. Hempeli, to discuss puzzle systems. And so, if everyone's ready, let's start.
I really like, Arvi, that you were like, the notes here just say.
Yeah, that's...
As if, dear listener, this was not a request made of us.
Always blame someone else.
That's how you dominate the world. Those little tricks.
Yeah.
That's how you do it.
Yeah. Blaming others, how you make your entire life into a puzzle.
Well, if someone is going to aim for global world domination, like, I would really prefer it. I would be okay with it. Arvi, I forgot to say your last name in the intro, but Arvi Tikari, you have made one of my most favorite games of all time, and that is Baba Is You. And I still have the soundtrack, and I still play it all the time.
People
still reference it. It comes up in memes. It was kind of a phenomenon. And you've been continually making games because I get notifications whenever you release something on Itch. So
oh, no.
you're quite busy making puzzles for world domination. So we're really glad to have you today.
I absolutely wouldn't want to dominate the world. That would be such a headache. I prefer making games.
You think making games is hard?
Yeah. You could tell, like, his delivery was a little half-hearted, and you know.
Yeah.
Making games is a nice self-contained problem in the life, and world domination is a little bit too large.
Yeah.
Too much responsibility.
Yeah. Exactly.
Before we dive into our discussion about puzzle systems today, I have a question I have to pass along from Jamal, one of the developers I work with on the regular. He was also a guest many months ago. He asked, why did you use Fusion as your development engine for Baba Is You? I think the specific wording he used was, can you ask him why on earth they chose the engine they did? So I'm curious if you have an answer for Jamal.
I do have an answer. It's not going to be satisfying, but that's life sometimes. So yeah, the background is that I use an ancient program called Multimedia Fusion 2. It has a newer version called Click Team Fusion 2.5. But I specifically made Baba Is You with the older version, Multimedia Fusion 2. And the Click Team suite of products, the Games Factory, Click and Play, Multimedia Fusion, and so on, are these like fairly old, or actually very old, game creation tools that were advertised in the 90s as this like easy way for kids to learn how to make games without having to know how to program. I think Click and Play was released in like 93 or 94.
Oh.
And it's not ideal. There are many better options nowadays, or maybe better is not the correct word, but like more versatile, more easy to use, more modern options. And for example, the game creation tool Construct was specifically created as by like an angry user of ClickTeam products to show that they could make a better tool. So the construct, which is much more popular right now, was literally like a statement against the program I'm using, which is kind of shows up about some like ancient rivalries. But obviously it's nice that the construct is a tool that people like to use. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I use these tools is that back in 2002, when I started making graphical games, I started with Game Maker, which Game Maker Studio and Game Maker Studio 2 are probably pretty well known at this point. But Game Maker was at its, I think, version 4 at the time, and it was fairly janky. So while I could make some simple games with that as a 10-year-old, I fairly quickly ran into the problem that that old version of Game Maker required knowledge of the of its own scripting language, the GML script. And because I was a Finnish 10-year-old kid with fairly low patience or attention span, I didn't really have what it took to actually like delve into the scripting part of Game Maker. I could only use the non-scripting parts. And so I was kind of stuck with that until a friend of mine or a schoolmate of mine introduced me to the Games Factory, which is one of the older ClickTeam products. And the Games Factory literally has like a feature of not having any kind of scripting language, not having any kind of text-based programming, which was super great for me at that point because, yeah, it was way easier for me to grasp like a drop-down list-based graphical programming thing than actual programming. And so I moved from the Games Factory to the newer versions, Multibit Fusion 1.5 and 2, and then stuck with those. And the big reason why I stuck with those is that once you get good at a very specific, unusual programming method like the one that those programs use, and you don't have any kind of intuition or even basic knowledge about kind of actual programming, of like how to use programming languages, the step of moving away from that limited tool that you know really, really well into the kind of proper tools, quote unquote, that can do much more, but that you don't know at all, gets pretty difficult. Like Multibit Fusion, even though it's outdated and it's old and it's limited and behind its competitors, it can still do surprisingly complicated things, such as Babai's U. So for years, I kind of had an internal battle of like, I need to move away from this. I want to use something that is more versatile and that can be ported into other platforms more easily, blah, blah, blah. But also, I can make a lot of stuff with this already. I enjoy using this tool that I know how to use. And that conflict has been here for a long time. And clearly, it was not kind of, I hadn't finished having that conflict by the time I started working on Baba Is You because I made it in Multimedia Fusion 2. But that's kind of the long and short of why Fusion.
You work with what you know. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, there's a lot of parallels with other types of tools. So I came up as a Flash developer. So a lot of what you're saying really rings true to me. And that's not as old in a sense, right?
At one point, I was actually trying to learn how to make games on Flash as an upgrade from Multibit Fusion, which might sound funny to a Flash developer.
And I think there's a there's this huge weight to like to move on, and but unless there's something specific that really requires you to, and I suppose if it's about career development, that's one matter thing. But if it's about you as an artist, then like if it works, it works.
Right.
There's not really a right answer, but like there are both paths are correct. For different people.
That is true. I feel like with the specific case of Multimedia Fusion and these ClickTeam products is that they kind of, as time moves on and you keep using the same very old tool that is no longer supported. I didn't move to the newer version, ClickTeam Fusion 2.5, for a couple of reasons. But since I kept using this old discontinued product, I kept running increasingly into the problem of like antivirus programs detecting it's a suspicious, it being literally unportable or nearly unportable to any other platform. Right. So it was kind of a situation where it could still be used. I still use it to this day, but the limitations I have to face in terms of my options and what kind of like tech support I'm going to give to people become increasingly limited the longer I use it. So I do agree that it was a fine tool. I don't regret making a lot of games with that program, but it's also definitely a thing where the kind of the problems were slowly piling up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the team I'm working with, we're working on the Dream Settler, the sequel to Hypnospace Outlaw. Hypnospace Outlaw was made in Click Team Fusion originally, but then it was moved relatively quickly to Construct before release. Ooh. So during development.
I actually thought it was Game Maker. Huh.
And then what happened with them is that when it came time to port, Construct is also not a particularly easy engine to do console ports for.
That's right.
And they had a lot of trouble, but I think they had a similar attitude. I mean, we're working in Unity now because we're trying to avoid those problems. But when they were doing that, we had all these problems, they piled up, but it was worth it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because otherwise, like, you know, when you start fresh, like, you can either do all the headaches now, like trying to be an expert in a new thing, or you can just like project some of the headaches later. It's like doesn't mean you made the wrong choice, you know?
Yeah. In my case, the solution to a lot of these problems was that there's a specific Danish company called MP2 Games, mm-hmm. where the CEO of the company used to work very heavily on Click Team tools, on like user-made plugins and stuff, and is a coding wizard. And he has made this engine called Chowdren that is literally made for translating these Fusion-made games into C++. And he has also expanded it to work with Construct, as far as I understand. So his entire business model is kind of porting games that are otherwise difficult to port without recoding everything from scratch.
Yeah.
Which is... I would be in so much trouble with Baba Is You if without MP2 Games. So huge thanks to them for finding that very specific niche of operation.
Yeah, allies and community, right?
Yeah.
Yes, we'll link to that in the show notes for sure. Because I'm sure you're not the only one facing that problem.
No. Oh, no doubt.
I feel like I just want to spend the next 40 minutes talking about porting, but we're not here to talk about that.
No, we're here to talk about puzzle systems.
Yeah.
What is a puzzle system? That's the first question I'm going to bring up to the table. What's the difference between this and just like designing puzzles?
Is that aimed at me?
It is aimed at you, yes.
I have an opinion, but I'm not the guest.
Yeah.
I would say that a puzzle system would be a collection of the tools used to solve puzzles in a given game or a given environment, whereas just a puzzle would be kind of what those tools are used for. But this is probably completely incorrect. Because
we might have made it up just as a way of kind of framing the conversation. But the way you described it was the same way I was thinking about the term too, right? Like if we think of a puzzle as maybe a level in a game that is about puzzles, then the system of actions and dynamics that are available to you as the maker of those puzzles would be the puzzle system.
Right. Yeah. So it's really the difference between a game like Baba Is You or say like Cut the Rope or something. And then... like the all-time puzzle classic series, Professor Layton, which is just puzzles on puzzles on puzzles, no systems at all, you know?
Yeah. I guess that's actually a really, really good example of like Professor Layton has the thing where there is no agreed set of mechanics, but instead it's explicitly kind of combining anything because every puzzle is kind of self-contained in a way.
I love that series. Like, I love it to death, but I would go crazy making a game like that.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
Like there's no rules, why?
Yeah.
you propose that to me, I'm like, bad idea for a game.
Yeah.
But I love it.
Yeah. Years and years ago, I made a puzzle game called Abstractica, and then I made a couple of sequels with another Finnish developer where the idea was that every level is basically like a still image from which you have to extract like a string or word as the answer. And I feel like some of the puzzles we made for that game were kind of like that, because if the only requirement for a puzzle, individual puzzle, is that the answer has to be a word that you input, then you get a lot of freedom of kind of like, how do you reach that word? Is it like a cipher, or is it a hidden image thing, or is it something meta where you have to search the internet for the answer, or do you have to play a mini game or something? And I think we were pretty good at figuring out like interesting answers to that, which feels kind of similar to what you were describing.
Yeah. And I think that actually that kind of gets us like to the boundaries of what a system can be, right?
Yeah.
Because it's just that one core mechanic of to answer the question, you enter a word and there are no other rules. That's still a system.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's still for sure. That still guides and structures. I think a lot of it can be about sort of theme and feel separately from just like the sort of puzzle metrics like difficulty or complexity.
Yeah, well, you're ultimately like the system kind of dictates what kind of puzzles you can make, but doesn't necessarily dictate all of the like the whole shape of a puzzle. Yeah. Like you were describing, RV, like you can make there's a lot of different ways you can approach just allowing people to just input a word to answer the question, right? So like even though that is the mechanical system involved with it, it doesn't necessarily mean that like the only way it doesn't ultimately mean that all of these games are now crossword puzzles. Like you built something, you can build something different just due to that, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Well, and then the sort of adorable tiny elephant shaped thing in the room here is Baba's You is very similar in that this is why we wanted to have this topic with you, because the thing about Baba's You that I think is, you know, remarked upon by everybody is it's a game of systems, right? Yeah. It's systems and the puzzle is about the systems to solve the puzzles, and there's so much variety, but it still feels cohesive, because I could see a through line from the earlier game, from Abstractica to Baba's You, and that idea. Was that something you tracked, or was that like a motivation, or did it develop naturally?
Definitely no intentional through line between those. I do feel that Baba Is You was kind of one of those things where the interest to make a puzzle game was there, but with Baba Is You, the idea specifically grew kind of, or came to be in a very organic way without any kind of intentional relation to something I had made before.
Interesting.
Was it always meant to be fully open-ended, or did you start with like these are the combinations we can do, or was the ambition, I guess I'm asking, to sort of have many, many, many different, you know, combinations of rule sets, or did you focus on, oh, this would be interesting, we could do this, and this with the system?
It was definitely like part of the very original concept I had for Baba Is You before I decided on anything else, was definitely to have that, I guess, open-endedness, just in the way that it seemed to me from the get-go that what I would want to do would be a system where you can combine the words kind of freely, or like that the system wouldn't be hard-coded to allow only specific sentences. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there was a lot of else that happened after that, but just in the sense of the specific what you are allowed to do, it did feel like I would get the most interesting game if I could make a system that would kind of facilitate or allow for that, because it was something where when I was at the Game Jam, Nordic Game Jam 2017, where I came up with Baba Is You's idea, one of the initial worries I had was that I would start making this idea I had in mind, and then I would run into some kind of a programming issue where I hadn't considered kind of the full implications of this rule-changing system, and then I would notice that, oh, okay, if I do this, it results in like a very difficult to resolve infinite loop or a very difficult to resolve rules conflict. And I don't have the time during this game jam to find a good solution and implement it. So it does feel like from the word go, I did want to make the game open-ended like that, but I was worried that might not be possible because of something that would only become apparent when I run into the problem.
Sure. And I mean, ultimately, also having an open system that large can make it difficult for players to like approach a game too, I would imagine, because like because there's so many different ways that you can approach solving a particular puzzle, that it makes it difficult to know at a glance what direction you should actually take. And that could be really daunting, I think, for players. I know I'm one of those players that has that issue.
Yeah, when I had like made the original Game Jam version of Baba Is You, And it was voted the best game of the event, which was one of the reasons why I decided to make a larger game. As I made the decision that, okay, I might start making something more out of this, I felt like I would have to decide very quickly or very, very early if I would want to make the game more into a sandboxy thing where the idea is that you are presented with a fairly free-form environment where you can play with the words to see kind of the funny stuff they can implement, or whether I would want to take the game into a more puzzly direction in that where puzzliness would also imply a more limited set of options or like a more restrictive layouts because like those are needed to make a puzzle that requires a specific answer. And it was obviously it's a little bit silly to say that I have to choose to either make it sandboxy thing or a puzzly thing, and there these are like extremes on some kind of a continuum. But it did feel kind of like it would make sense to pick one of those as the main objective of the game or the main thing that the game does. And I ultimately decided to go more towards the like more restrictive puzzle direction because I personally enjoy puzzle games. And and Baba's Use idea came to me probably partially because of puzzle games. Mm-hmm. So it seemed like I would end up making a game more like myself if I chose the more puzzly implementation.
And that's why I found it really interesting when you said that you kind of came to the same conclusion with Baba's Use that you did your previous game, that word game you were talking about. Because like they do sound like kind of, as Mark was saying, as a cohesive whole. And I think you kind of just brought that just being you as a developer, which I think is really fascinating.
Yeah, I guess it could be accounted on kind of how my brain approaches or like what kind of things I find fascinating as a designer, because for me, anytime I make games, there is definitely a very, very big factor of kind of like, I get an idea and I go through the idea in my head, or at least what I can see of it at that time. And I consider like, does this feel exciting to me on some level? Can I find something that I personally find cool about this idea, which is probably what all game developers do.
Yeah.
But it's, I guess, like Abstractica, the word game, and Baba Is You both had that kind of a feel of like, oh yeah, this idea tickles me in some way. Mm-hmm. Maybe I should pursue it. Although Abstractica was made so early, in like 2007 or something, it's a very, very janky, rough game. Like I spent maybe like, I don't know, 2 days setting it together. Like in many ways, it's much less a well thought out thing and more something where young me was just doing stuff.
Yeah. And we're doing that thing that we always do on the show, which is we find a lens to look at something through, right?
Yeah.
And so, which isn't always the only lens.
Right.
It could be useful.
Mm-hmm.
But what I find really interesting about you were talking about the choice you made with Baba is that the systems you built, what you established, could allow for either of those directions.
Yeah.
And choosing one is not... It is saying no to something else, right? And so we talked about this in a recent episode where, Steven, you're talking about jump mechanics.
Yeah.
Jump and dash, where it's like, that's whatever, but it comes down to level design.
Yeah.
And I think there's a similar story here, which is that in order to make those systems restrictive, you needed to, the designing the puzzles, the levels, is what, because if you make a game where literally anything can happen, then, you know, you have to draw bounds around it somewhere.
Right.
So that's my question to you then, is like, how do you start drawing those bounds?
Ooh.
Is it that you're picking the first couple of verbs and you're sort of playing around with those, or are you going straight into, I'm going to design a couple of puzzles first? Do you play around with it and just see what happens? What's the process?
I've definitely noticed certain patterns in how I set up Baba Is You puzzles, where similarly to how I evaluate game ideas I have of like, does this feel fun to me or like cool, or does this excite me? kind of consideration. I feel like with puzzle ideas, I usually kind of go through different concepts in my mind of like, what would be the crux of the puzzle, of what could be the big thing that the puzzle is about, which usually is, in Baba Is You, the interaction of two or more words, or just one word with itself, or some spatial implication of the system, basically interaction between different elements in these levels. And so I go through ideas I can come up with of like, what if I combine this and that? Can I think of something that would be interesting about that? Especially I'm looking for kind of insightful moments where I can think of something that is directly implied by the way the rules work, but that isn't apparent for the player unless they already know it from before. So kind of trying to look for interactions that make sense in hindsight, but that are not just developments on what you have learned before. And when I find something like that, or just an idea that seems in some way interesting, which is usually like the kind of evaluation of whether something is interesting is obviously made very vaguely, because at that point, I'm not even making a level, I'm just thinking about it. But when I find something like that, I might write it down or just try to remember it until I start working on the game. And then I've sometimes described the process of actually making the level kind of reverse engineering, where I already have an idea of what the crux of the problem is and what the insight is that I want the player to realize mm-hmm. in the level. And then I try to design a level where I try to reach like a starting position of things where, in order to get to the end goal, you have to go through that insight, or you have to have that insight. And something with the kind of freedom of expression, I guess, in Baba Is You, that became apparent as I was working on it, was that the early levels can more easily allow for unintended solutions. Mm. Most of the levels had unintended solutions when they went through testing, I needed to adjust almost all of them at least once. But I noticed that in the earlier levels, there were many situations where an unintended solution could actually be left in, because the level might still teach what it's trying to teach. If it's a tutorial level, or the unintended solution might teach something else that is still new to the player that is relevant for future levels. So it felt like even if the player solved the level in an unintended way, even if the level is kind of open-ended, quote-unquote, the player would still be seeing something new and learning something new that might be still effectively the same thing as what I intended, or it might be a different thing, in which case I would have to make sure that whatever inside the player then skipped by doing the unintended solution would be shown somewhere else, so that they don't like lose a lesson. But as the player goes further into the game, the levels by necessity have to become more restrictive in what they allow and how much kind of freedom the player has, because as the puzzles get more difficult, they become more complicated and more intricate. Mm-hmm. And so allowing the player to kind of do unintended solutions of those more intricate levels would, in most situations, mean that the player sees a less intricate setup or has like an easier level, or they kind of like, it would be more likely that what they're doing is bypassing something. And also it would be more likely that what they end up doing instead of seeing the like intricate intended solution would be something they have already seen, because there are only so many ways you can kind of break a puzzle. So it seemed kind of like, I would want in those later levels to be more restrictive, not only because that restriction would force the players with higher likelihood to see what I want them to see, to have the insight I want them to have, but also because the likelihood of an unintended solution being kind of boring or something the player has already experienced also became higher. So that it was kind of a that is kind of the way I justify to myself why the levels become more convoluted, more intricate, more restrictive as time goes on.
Mm-hmm. How does that, you know, how has that process maybe evolved for you over time? And have you seen patterns in the way that your brain thinks about these puzzle systems, you know, going back to 2007 with Abstractica to, you know, now thinking about the overall practice of putting those systems together?
Mm-hmm. I do feel like I've learned a lot over time about my design process, like adjusted my design process of puzzles. But it feels sometimes like most of my development as a puzzle game and puzzle designer has come after Baba Is You. I feel like before Baba Is You, I spent a lot of time wanting to make a puzzle game and making a lot of puzzle game prototypes. And with most of those, I run into several problems of kind of like having an idea that lends itself for a couple interesting situations that fulfill my internal feeling of like, yeah, this is cool. And then after that, I would run into a roadblock of like, I don't know what to do next, how to find new puzzles, in which case I would then add more mechanics, which would then add a couple of new puzzles. And kind of every mechanic would take the game slightly away from the core idea I initially had. Yeah. So I struggled actually quite a bit with puzzle design. Apart from maybe a couple of exceptions, maybe Abstractica could be said to have been one of those exceptions. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But with Baba Is You, I feel like I kind of stumbled into something that worked really well and that lent itself really well to the kind of puzzle design that I find most satisfying, which is looking for those insights. And then because Baba Is You gave me a lot to work with, I could refine my own feelings and approaches to later puzzle design, which has then meant that it has been much easier to make other puzzle games in the future because I have a better idea of what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is very nice. I'm very happy about that.
You have that feeling of like what it takes to distill. You know, if you have this big volume of ideas you can work with this mechanic, and then every level that you're making, you have to less and less to work with because you have to make it a more intricate puzzle. Like you said, that means you have like more constraints. You have to, you've kind of worked through your process, your distillation equipment in your mind. So you kind of know what that feels like. Yeah.
I feel like it's also partially that I learned some kind of internal tricks of where to look for the kind of puzzles that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
In that kind of like, usually in this kind of a puzzle system, I might find something that I feel would be cool in these interactions. And also kind of like honing my intuition of like, when I come up with a puzzle idea, I might have a more accurate sense of kind of, is this one of those puzzle ideas that only works for five levels and then I run out of ideas? Or is this something where I can keep making more and more stuff? And I've definitely, with the little puzzle games that I've been releasing this year, I've definitely had both experiences.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you think that the difference between something you can build a lot with and something that has a limit or needs to be developed further to allow for more possibilities. Do you think that's something that is very specific to the idea? Like Baba, the core concept of Baba has incredible implications that takes a long time to explore. I think another example would be like Superhot is another one where like the idea is very simple, but you can continually explore its implications without having to add any new ideas to it. Mm. Do you think that's something that is available to most or many ideas? And the reason maybe you couldn't find that earlier is because your experience, or is it something that it really is just down to like this idea is big and this idea is small?
Well, the obvious answer is both depends on the situation.
That's a good answer.
I do feel like thinking about and sometimes even returning to older puzzle ideas that I've had, I've kind of evaluated them again and noticed that no, this idea actually doesn't really stretch itself to much more. Mm-hmm. I feel like especially if the initial push to even think about the puzzle idea is that I can think of like a cool insight, like a cool implication of the system, where my interest is mainly that I want to kind of surprise the player by showing them something that they didn't expect. It feels like many puzzle ideas that hinge entirely, or like where the entire thing is about that surprise kind of to the player, or maybe multiple surprises to the player, they might turn out not to have much meat to them outside of that surprise. Or sometimes I've also had situations where it's like, I could reveal the player something about this puzzle system eventually that would be a really cool surprise for the player. And then when I start thinking about puzzles, I realize that I can maybe think of one puzzle or zero puzzles before that reveal, of like the pre-reveal puzzle system, which is limited by not being allowed to use that interesting thing that I thought up, is actually very limited, and I can't think of much content there. Whereas post-reveal, where I'm allowed to use the potentially full depth of the system, I can think of much more. But just to give an example, I have this puzzle idea that I've tried to build, I think, maybe four different times at this point. Where the idea is that you have doorways. It's a platformer. You have doorways that link to other doorways. So you have a door that says A, and then you have another door that says A. And you go through the door, and you come out of the other door. And then the kind of first surprise is that these doors can be picked up and moved around and thrown around. And so you can have doors A and B that lead to other doors A and B. You pick up door B, and then it's interesting that you can then walk through door A while carrying door B to change how those things link together. And it's a concept that for a long, long time felt like it was really cool. Like it satisfied my internal feeling of like, yeah, this is neat. This is exciting. And then every time I tried to make a puzzle game out of it, I realized that actually just having portals that can be carried around, but that limit your movement in that you don't preserve your momentum like in the actual game portal, those are actually very limited. And I still haven't really figured out, when I returned to that game after releasing Baba Is You, I looked at it and realized that no, this idea still doesn't really doesn't expand. And also with Game Jam games, I've noticed a similar thing where sometimes you make a game that works really well for a game jam, where it's like, here's a distilled experience that lasts for a very limited time, but does exactly what it needs to do to convey a feeling or showcase a cool mechanic or give you an interesting puzzle to solve. And then when you go past that and try to make it into something larger, with an idea of like, I want to make a commercial game out of this, and this game jam version is too limited to be like considered, in my opinion, like a commercial title, you run into the problem where it's difficult to elaborate on that. You find it difficult to expand on the idea because for one reason or the other, it just works much better in that distilled shape. Or maybe you just don't realize how to make it larger. Obviously, it's impossible to say. It might be that just thinking 1 second more about the idea would reveal to you an endless depth of like new concept that could make the best commercial game ever. Then you spend 1 second thinking about it and don't come up with anything. But then you can think, well, if I spend 5 seconds, maybe then I realize something. And then you spend the next 5 years hoping that you figure out something about that idea. Been there, done that.
Yeah.
It's kind of an indictment on the box we put around what commercial games can be, right? Because there's a tragedy to that. Like, if that idea is like, if the right size of it is small, isn't it a shame that its avenues of distribution are so limited?
Yeah.
I mean, just to bring down the clubhouse briefly.
Yeah, it's definitely something where I have an internal, very vague or very nebulous evaluation process of kind of like, is this large enough that I would consider this like a serious game or quote unquote big game or something that I would put on Steam? And then how that evaluation formed, why does it work that way? Is it fair towards my own games or other games? is not something that I like. It's something that I use to evaluate my games, and I'm definitely lucrative enough as a game developer that it's not a problem, but it's definitely something where it's a huge shame that you might see the coolest game ever and then have a feeling of like, oh, this is so like, it only took me 10 minutes to play. It's the best game I ever played, but it's only 10 minutes. So obviously I wouldn't pay money for it on Steam.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as sad as it all is, it is really important for developers, even if you're ambitions are just, I'm going to put out some stuff on itch every now and again, mm-hmm. to get a sense of that.
Yeah.
So you can either work within that system or you can deliberately buck it, right?
Yeah.
Like if you want to fight that, mm-hmm. then it's important to know what it is, right? Rather than just insisting, you know, it's like, shouldn't be that way or something.
Yeah.
Which it shouldn't be that way, mm-hmm. but you know.
Talking about Stephen Lavelle or Ink Repair, the developer of Stephen Sausage Roll, one of my favorite puzzle games ever, he's been kind of the what do you call it? Like showcase puzzle designer for this month, basically mm-hmm. on the server, and he has made a ton of games, including a lot of puzzle script games because he invented puzzle script, and many puzzle script games are very small. And people were posting their favorite games from Stephen Lavelle. And one of them was this game with the name of which is Bring the Ice Cube to the Goal Without Exposing It to Heat, which I'm going to link to this call, which is literally a single puzzle. But people were still bringing it up as their favorite puzzle from this specific developer. Oh. And I feel like that's just an interesting illustration of like, you make a singular, very elegant puzzle and people will remember it, even though it's just a singular puzzle to play. And that's cool.
Guys.
Yes, what?
I got new accounting software.
Oh.
And so, like, I'm keeping better track of my company's finances.
Okay.
And this is not an ad for that.
I was like,
I know it sounds like that.
It's a very standard podcast ad.
Right. No.
It's weird.
I'm just saying, I was taking a look and I was seeing, like, what our Patreon revenues are.
Oh.
And, like, they're good.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, endless thanks to the folks who support us on Patreon.
Yes, thank you.
But I was just looking at that number and I'm like, you know what? Could be bigger.
It could. Could always be bigger.
And so I thought I'd come to the two of you and say, hey, is there anything we can do to encourage that number to, you know, be bigger?
Maybe we could make a call to action to convince people to go to patreon.com/nicegamesclub and sign on and give us money.
Now, that's fine.
Uh-huh.
But, like, why would anyone do that?
Add free episodes, maybe? Bonus content, I think? Fun stuff we have on the Patreon.
Monthly amount, any tier, gets you all that stuff.
Yeah.
I did also, because I think we made this promise in our last pitch, you can just give us $4 if you want pictures of Ellen's cats.
Yes.
Ellen's dogs, sorry.
I was like, wait, what cats?
Sorry.
Where are they?
I don't know if it's happened in the episode yet, but there's some cat content in this episode, so I was a little distracted.
Yes. Yeah.
But you can just give us a one-time fee if you just want those pictures, because, you know. Those are some charming dogs. But really, any amount helps the show.
Any amount.
And yeah, it gets you that stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
All that stuff. And it helps us out, because we could use the help.
That's the main reason.
That's the main reason.
I mean, you know, keep the show going.
Mm-hmm.
Keep us, you know, in the... I now know the difference. You know, I have accounting software now.
Yeah.
I can tell how much money I'm losing. It's incredible. It's incredible how much money I'm losing.
Oh, what a dream. So go to patreon.com/nicegamesclub. Donate any amount. We'd appreciate it. I did have a question about player expression. I think that oftentimes players can kind of bounce off of some puzzle games because they feel like they're solving. I mean, I guess they feel very guided, right? Like puzzle games, they typically have one solution, and you kind of solve some like a setup that the developer has given you, which I mean is cool. But I think that sometimes people feel like partly like guided into a solution, or partly feel like they're basically just completing a set of steps that the developer is allowing for them. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on the how player expression fits into puzzle games, puzzle systems.
Yeah, that's definitely something that sounds familiar. I've heard it said that some people think that or feel that sometimes playing a puzzle game is more about kind of learning how the developer thought about designing the puzzles, of kind of like getting into the developer's head and understanding what they find interesting on how they or how they approach puzzle design to help figure out or like to help see those approaches you need to take. And I feel that I've also heard a criticism of Baba Is You where some people have felt that the game became less enjoyable as they went further because of exactly that, where the player freedom to approach the puzzles in different ways lessened as time went on because of what we already discussed. And that's absolutely true. The levels become more restrictive. I feel like that kind of player expression, obviously there are sometimes puzzles where it feels like you are not really even solving a puzzle. You are just doing the obvious moves one after another to see things move around in a neat way and get to the ending. That's maybe its own troublesome situation for a game to end up in. But I do feel that when it comes to less egregious examples, giving the player freedom to express themselves by doing inventive solutions is something that's cool if it is in a game, but it doesn't feel like something that I would want to consider like a requirement or like a baseline thing that games generally should have. It definitely feels like something where certain games are more well suited for that. And also sometimes overly open-ended puzzles can feel overwhelming in their own way. And like sometimes it's nice to have this guidance of kind of like, this level has these elements, so the level probably wants me to use them in some way. So probably the first thing I should consider is like, how can these things be used together? So in some ways, I feel like sometimes that kind of limiting the player's freedom by kind of giving them some answers or like at least some direction can work in the favor of a puzzle by making the player kind of concentrate on what's relevant. And that also ties very interestingly to the idea of red herrings, where I feel like there might be, nowadays I feel like puzzle games generally or puzzle game designers frown on using red herrings. I feel like that is something where in the past it's being considered a more of a valid tactic. And in Baba Is You, I started with the idea that sometimes it can be fun to have a red herring, like a element that misleads the player but isn't actually relevant for the puzzle. But as I went on, I eventually changed my opinion on that and realized that, okay, actually, it feels more elegant if a puzzle utilizes all the components the player is presented with, unless there is a very good, very funny joke to be told where the player where the player can have a good laugh.
Universal exception.
Like, that was just a joke.
Like
it's a one exception that comes to mind as kind of like why having red herrings would be something that I would enjoy. But it's definitely it feels like, especially with Baba Is You, I feel like I've more often been in this in situation where the levels feel too open-ended. Sure. They give the player too large a search space, kind of too much power of expression than too little. But obviously, in this case also, the like solve space being large is somewhat different from player expression. Like, I'm conflating those two, even though I shouldn't. But I feel like there's a kind of a link there.
I very much appreciate that answer, because I definitely agree that player expression, I think it gets a lot of value is put on player expression.
It goes on the box.
Yes. So
your choices matter in a narrative game.
Yeah, something
it's
like
that kind of thing, but right. We all know.
Yeah. That's not real. and so, like, I appreciate your answer in that, like, not every genre of game or type of game lends itself well to player expression, like you said. And I definitely think that there's a lot of merit to be had in games that don't allow for player expression, because one of the things you brought up that I thought was really cool is that you can kind of you sort of do have to think about how the game works from the mind of the developer in a way that isn't explicitly like communicated, but like you still experience that. And I think that is really fascinating.
It's a whodunit, right?
Yeah. Like
the criminal is the developer, right? You got to figure out how they did the crime.
Who is responsible for this horrible puzzle?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So there's something that you spoke about earlier related directly to this that I really want to get your thoughts on, which is you said there were unintended solutions that were more common in the early going in BABA. And then later, it would have to be something that players would have to really fight to find the alternate solutions, right? Speedrun exploits, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Just from my experience playing it, I definitely felt that the sort of accidental alternates that would sometimes show up, I don't know how many of them I recognized or how many of them I really did, but I kind of understood later in the game that I could try to do it wrong or try to do it in a weird way, but I knew it would be harder. Like, I felt the game did a pretty good job of communicating that. But I think as you described it, it was really more of a consequence of the way the system was designed. So I want to ask, if you had the opportunity to close off all alternate solutions, would that solve a lot of problems with player communication, tutorialization, and expectations? Or do you like the fact that for a little while anyway, players can kind of bend the rules until it gets more restrictive later? Because I could see a value to that even as it tightens up, but I could also see that something that you just don't want or wouldn't like.
I feel like the value there depends very heavily on how well the game otherwise communicates with the player what they can do, or like how the game does tutorialization and teaching, where I feel like giving the player more freedom of approach is generally, or like giving the player meaningful freedom of approach where they can solve the puzzles in ways that are unusual, and the player can get the feeling of like, oh, I solved that in a very unusual way. I would say that as a baseline, that is almost always a positive, in that it feels good as a player to feel that you kind of outsmarted the game or found an interesting thing. You made your own kind of story out of the level. But the problems that might arise, first of all, is the tutorialization that I mentioned, where if the level's intended solution is meant to showcase to you something that you need later, kind of like, here's the tutorial for this mechanic, and it might not be like in Baba Is You, there is no in-level text outside of the museum level pack. And so the game tries to teach the player new mechanics by requiring them to use them. And so if a level that is supposed to showcase the player something new gets kind of broken by an unintended solution and the player never sees that, they might later be in a situation where they are required to use that interaction or the insight from that earlier level that they never had. And so they get stuck because now the level requires not only the insight required to solve the level normally, but also the insight that was supposed to be in the earlier level. One thing that also came to mind is that there is kind of a, how interesting these kinds of unintended solutions are, or like how valuable they are in a way, I feel depends a little bit also on how complicated the puzzle itself is, or kind of like how complicated the alternative solution is, where if the player feels like they have a way of kind of breaking the puzzle, but that requires a lot of busy work, like it's a, It's kind of the classic like a is it a problem if a game has an optimal answer to something where the optimal answer is boring to do or unpleasant to do? Yeah. And I feel like puzzle games can have that as well, where it's kind of like if you can brute force a level very easily and the brute force requires just trying everything until you find the solution, that is kind of, most people would consider that boring to do.
Right.
And so even though technically it would be just one way to approach the solution, among others, it might be something that the player developer might want to limit. And similarly to these unintended solutions, if a level turns out to have an unintended solution, but the unintended solution is very like convoluted or confusing or feels bad in some way, then I personally, as a developer, would probably want to limit that, even though it technically limits the player's expression ability in the game.
Well, I mean, in that same vein, like players are, what's the saying that they always say? Players will optimize the fun out of a game, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
basically, like if it seems like the most apparent solution is the boring, tedious one, and you want them to do something more interesting and more engaging, players are going to potentially go down this more boring, more route method in order to get through this the puzzle, which makes the game less enjoyable and makes the players start mistrusting the game, and you know it makes it all worse. So that's another example of where player expression can hamper the design of a puzzle in a way that
I feel like in Baba Is You, specifically the thing that I mentioned, where if a player kind of has the ability to break a puzzle, in Baba's case, I guess the usual thing was that early on in development, I used to leave these like rules that you cannot change against the wall, but still accessible to the player, because I thought that would be cooler, because then the rules will still be kind of at the player's reach, even though they were not meant to be interacted with. Mm-hmm. And so the player finds a way to break one of those rules that was not supposed to be kind of player interactable. Usually what ends up happening is that the level becomes trivial. Maybe the walls stop being stopped, so the player can just walk through walls directly to the end or something.
Yeah.
And it feels like the player, like if every level was really open-ended and allowed for something equivalent to that, it would be cool the first time, where it's like, oh, I broke this rule that looked like it was supposed to be uninterruptible. I can now walk through walls and I get to the end.
Yeah.
Then 50 levels later, if every level between that level and the first level was solved the same way, the player just looked for that place where they can break the wall rule and walk through the walls to the end, then I would argue it. Most players would find that boring instead of exciting at that point.
Right.
So in that sense, it felt to me like it made sense to kind of, again, limit the player's access to things in order to make the levels more like they were intended to be, rather than allow the player to see the same cheese solution in every level.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
There's a saying in screenwriting, which is things should be surprising but inevitable. And so one of the things that's fun about those moments in Baba where you realize like, oh, this means I can do this, and it's, you know, whatever. Or like you think it's a really hard puzzle, but then the solution is actually one of those clever workarounds. You say you do that 50 times, it's no longer surprising.
Yeah.
And so it's not that interesting. So there's a bunch of them in Baba Is You, and a lot of games, successful games, do that kind of like subverting expectations that is surprising but inevitable. So generally, specifically with Baba, but just generally, how do you approach that kind of progression in a game of like, we're going to have unique, clever ideas every single go? Or is it more like, we have a system, we're going to let players do the easy version, the medium version, the hard, you know what I mean? More of a natural progression versus like, let's hit them with novelty because the system allows for it. How do you calibrate the ebb and flow of that?
Right. I feel like this also ties somewhat to the kind of tutorialization aspect where mm-hmm. my personal desire as a puzzle designer or game designer in general is that I would like for every level to have a new insight. I feel like I was inspired very heavily by Stephen's Sausage Roll and Snake Bird, both of which I feel involve some kind of a new insight in every level, except maybe the very first ones. And in Baba Is You, I aimed to do that where, as I mentioned previously, my process of developing the levels was about finding an interaction that I felt was interesting and also that I hadn't used before, that I felt was kind of new in some way, and making a level around that. Obviously, it's not going to work that way every time because people approach games individual levels very differently from each other. So something that I personally thought was an insight would be obvious to some player, or something that I wasn't really even thinking about could be an insight for a different player. Mm. Obviously, it's impossible to kind of balance that kind of a thing, but I could still aim for that because that's kind of what I would want to see, where every level has a new insight. But then there are those levels that are supposed to teach something to the player,
right,
where sometimes it might feel after testing or maybe just by thinking about it that a given new mechanic is too complicated to be contained in a singular level, where it's kind of like one level has an insight of kind of like, here's a new mechanic, a new element. The insight is just seeing how it works, where the player needs to learn what that new thing does, especially in a game with no like narration or text description of how things work. And then maybe it would be that having the full depth of that new mechanic in one level would be too much to take in. And so I would feel that I want to make kind of a second level that is like that is still on the same topic as the previous level, mm-hmm. but more convoluted, more difficult, or more like concentrating on a different thing to get the full lesson in for the player, where it's like, first level, here's a new mechanic. Second level, here's the advanced utilization of this new mechanic so that you know what to do next. And I feel like those tutorialization moments are the main place where I'm personally okay with kind of having the same level but more difficult after one level. In general, I'm not like, if I'm playing puzzle games myself, I usually don't mind levels that are just, here's the same thing again, but with more complexity, with more difficulty. But when designing my own puzzle levels, I usually don't want to do that unless there is that like tutorialization element.
Yeah,
I think that makes sense. You know, I'm kind of imagining that one of the pillars, like the game design pillars that you're going for across all the games that you're describing, that you're making, is making the player feel clever. And I think it's hard to make the player feel clever unless there is an aspect of novelty to each element of, you know, each unfolding of the concept, right, of the system. So, yeah, that totally makes sense. Also hard to do.
Yeah.
You have to continually look at it in a different way. It's like a kaleidoscope, but it's all in your brain. You have to kind of like keep looking at it in different ways.
Yeah. Challenge. Yeah, and then like there's definitely a thing where even if like it would be difficult to succeed even if I was making a game for just myself, where it's like, I'm trying to make a game only for me, and I'm trying to make it so that every level has something interesting. Obviously, making a game for myself doesn't really make sense, but let's forget about that. But when you get outside of just your own brain of like, all these levels feel interesting and insightful for me, then you have an endless supply of players who are all different people who will see things differently. And so for some of them, it might be that, oh, the level was just kind of boring. It was very easy, and I had to do the boring thing. For some players, like, that was impossibly difficult. I couldn't even solve this. Please make it easier or something. And then as a designer, you just have to hope that the kind of net like net of all these different experiences ends up being positive for most players, because some players are inevitably going to hate the game, unfortunately.
Well, they can play something else.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, and they'll miss out on world domination. So, you know, they're lost.
Yeah.
Well, I think, dear listener, we're getting a view of the cat. And you're
using
not
the litter box, the most cutest thing a cat can
get
do.
Get jealous.
Right.
Well, you mentioned it a couple of times or hinted at it briefly, validating all of these ideas and playtesting. It's one of the things we talk about on the show a lot. Describe a little bit your process for seeing if it works, either through your own testing or formal playtests or QA or any of that. How does that work for you?
Are you asking in the sense of like a singular puzzles or an entire puzzle mechanic or an entire game?
Well, it's been my experience that developers have wildly different ways and we're all saying we don't do it enough. So yeah. I'm giving you the freedom to approach that question however you like.
I feel like when it comes to puzzle mechanics or like puzzle concepts, my system of considering if it works or not is mostly just my personal hunch. I usually don't really ask for opinions of like, does this sound interesting? Except in like very specific circumstances where I'm actually uncertain myself. But I feel like at this point, I've been making games for long enough and I have a strong enough internal stuporness or something to begin with, that when I think about things that I would like to make, puzzle ideas, puzzle game ideas, puzzle mechanics, I usually just make the call just by like, yeah, that sounds cool, I'll make that. When it comes to individual puzzles, on the other hand, I usually, well, of course, I'm evaluating that myself all the time as well, where like just the decision of whether I will make a given puzzle or not, whether I will try to make it, depends on my own internal assumption of like, is this cool? Is this something that would make for a good puzzle? And then when I'm making the puzzle, I might change my mind of like, this actually, yeah, I'm not feeling it. But then I rely very much on tester feedback, where showcasing things I made for other people. My cat is considering biting my feet because I'm not paying attention to her. Then the like further evaluation of a given puzzle depends heavily on how other people see it, because, well, obviously, I will get blind to the mechanics I'm making, how difficult they are, how much sense they make, blah blah blah, and so testers are kind of the only way, except for maybe not working on the game for a while and returning to it, to kind of get a fresh look. And when it comes to individual game ideas or like game mechanics, I feel like it doesn't really, but there is no like similar mechanic of getting blind to what you're doing. Maybe it's possible to get blind in the sense of like thinking up a game mechanic that is too convoluted. But yeah, actually, yeah, now that I think about it, that's maybe the form of kind of blindness to your own work that happens also with entire game mechanics. But I feel like that's maybe more easy to detect or more easy to become aware of as you work on it, because you have to implement the entire mechanic. You have to make puzzles for that mechanic specifically. So you might have more points of reflection of kind of like, this is feeling kind of convoluted. I wonder if this makes sense. And then maybe at that point, you can ask your friends or testers, so they're like, is this too convoluted? And with Baba Is, you actually did have some of those moments where I have like, this puzzle mechanic is really cool, and testers tell me, no, it sucks. It's bad. Which was very helpful. But just in terms of individual puzzles themselves, yeah, as I mentioned earlier, I'm pretty sure that almost every single puzzle in Baba Is You, at least the base game, has been changed based on tester feedback, because it's very easy to become blind for a lot of things. It's very easy to overlook things. And also, there is always the kind of battle between things that I, as a designer, find cool that might be maybe frustrating or annoying in some level that I still feel have value in some way. And getting feedback from testers to kind of try to find a mental balance of like, is this idea too convoluted, too annoying, too something to put it in, even though I feel like it's cool in some way? Or do I feel that it's still so cool that it justifies its existence despite complaints from players or my own internal worries about it? That happens quite a bunch, where I end up like maybe removing some levels because I think they have value, but then testers are too unanimously negative about it, or feel like the coolness is doesn't justify the frustration. Or sometimes I might feel that testers find something frustrating, but I feel like the idea is too cool to leave out. Especially I feel like I, as a game designer or puzzle designer, maybe enjoy trying to go through as wide an amount of implications of a system as possible. Like, I find it cool to explore the full width, not actually full, but like as full as I can envision width of the game mechanics, which eventually leads to those like more esoteric puzzles that might be kind of that might be interesting in the implications they have, but not very good as puzzles.
Yeah.
And that is the point where the kind of conflict between the how interesting a puzzle is and how valuable or interesting, like, or how fun a puzzle is to solve, how good a puzzle it is, and how good of an like exploration of the idea it is, becomes kind of a balancing factor.
Right.
Which is, at this point, it's very nice that I have a very strong difficulty of killing my darlings, of cutting out content if I'm in love with it. So Baba Is You definitely has a lot of puzzles where now, soon 6 years after its release, I look at some puzzles and I'm like, that puzzle sure is not good. Mm-hmm. That puzzle doesn't justify its existence, but it's too late now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a moment in time, right? It's
yeah. Yeah, Ellen liked it. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, and Ellen is the arbiter, so.
True.
We let her make the big decisions around here.
Yeah. Something that I've really enjoyed with the games that I made after Baba Is You, for example, these tiny puzzle games that I've been making this year, these Cove Mount likes, as they are called on itch.io, is that they are these like very bite-sized, tiny explorations of a singular puzzle kind of gimmick or variation on the like block-pushing Sokoban genre. And because they are so small, it's very easy for me to justify internally not doing any playtesting, like outside playtesting. Yeah. I'm making a tiny thing where I'm specifically acknowledging that it's like a janky exploration of an idea that I find cool.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter as much if some of the puzzles are not as good as the others, or if it has like odd corners and stuff, which is very freeing because, like with Baba Is You, I definitely did have to consider those things quite a bunch because I felt like I had much more responsibility about making like a good game. But when I'm making a tiny HTML5 browser puzzle game, I don't need to make a good game. I can just make an interesting game.
And, yeah.
You're sketching it out.
If the players are not having fun, that is their problem. I don't have to worry about that.
You know, they'll spend 10 minutes.
Yeah. It's a brilliant, like, recognition of context.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that.
I do still worry about it, but...
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it actually reminds me a little bit about, you know, like, painters, for example. You know, one of the things that they will do, and you'll see this on people who are creating web comments, they'll have like a DeviantArt page or something that they're putting out on Patreon where they share basically work in progress. And sometimes that can be work in progress on an upcoming panel. But one of the things you'll also find with like, you know, like painters from the classical era or romantics or whatever, is you'll find their sketchbooks where they're not necessarily working on a piece. They're testing out an idea.
Yeah.
And there's still a ton of, I want to say value, but I think that's like corporate speak creeping into my language. There is a lot of joy, I think, to be had in a viewer, someone who is interested in the art, to see those. Oh my gosh, you are getting assaulted by your cat. Okay, well, I'll wrap up this idea and then we can let you go soon. Anyway, meanwhile, I have like completely zonked out dogs. They're just being so good right now. Yeah.
That is excellent.
So this is just the difference between dogs and cats. They would be bothering me if they were hungry.
Yeah.
Sorry, I wanted to show my cat playing with my hand, but then she did a full-on attack. So.
Yeah. Well, just to kind of wrap up the thing I was saying is, there's a ton of joy, I think, as an art viewer or consumer or appreciator to look at those sketchbooks that aren't necessarily works in progress, but just the testing of ideas. I think it deepens the conversation between artist and, I don't know, what's the other person? Viewer? game player, you know? And I think it can, enrich that. So I hope you keep doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I really enjoy kind of archival. I have I get a lot of satisfaction of kind of making lists of things I've made and keeping them in like binders at my house, and like keeping old files around to look at them later and stuff. Like, I really enjoy this kind of like looking at the work in progress stuff, looking at how things changed and so on. Also with like book authors and stuff. Like, I'm as a kid, especially, like I'm a huge fan of Lord of the Rings, and there's been a bunch of this like releasing old writing from Tolkien where he was building the world. And I've been a sucker for those kinds of things. Although some years ago, I bought one book listing some of the stuff that Tolkien had been considering about when do elves marry? How many kids do they get? How many years did it take for them to make this travel from this? Do elves have beards? Do they eat mushrooms? And I realized, okay, this is a little bit too much even for me.
Yeah.
Generally, I enjoy that.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I mentioned these games that I made in 2002 as a 10-year-old when I started making games. I still have source codes for most of those because I just find it's very satisfying to keep those around. And it's always nice when it seems like there is also like a game player who enjoys seeing the process. Yeah. And Baba Is You also has the full level pack, the museum, which was built explicitly around the idea of like showcasing the process of making some levels and showcasing kind of like what could have been. Yeah. And it's something I really love as a designer, but also as a player and experiencer of things.
We did an episode recently where we talked a little bit about what happens to game developers when they become too familiar with the process.
Yeah.
Do they sort of lose the magic of being a player? And we talked a little bit about how that can be true, but what you can also get is an appreciation of that process. Mm-hmm. And so it's nice to hear that that's something you believe is like, players should be let into all this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's fantastic. It's great that you're doing that.
Yeah, it's definitely, I can understand the point that it's like those work in progress things, they are messy. And sometimes like I can completely appreciate that a developer might wish to kind of present the players with a refined vision,
sure,
where everything works, and keep the like rough edges out of sight. Like it's if someone wants to do that, that's okay. I just personally find it enjoyable to like see also the rough edges, or be able to kind of compare what was before and what is now. But I have to say that as I've made more games, playing games has become so much more difficult. It's so difficult to kind of get a feeling of like, oh, I want to play a game now when you are making games. I just still enjoy games, but it's like Outer Wilds has been on my must play list for, well, since 2019 when it released, and I still haven't played it because like it's, many people have told me that it's their favorite game ever, and I'm pretty sure that I would enjoy it greatly. It hits definitely my interests as a game player, but when do I have time to play Outer Wilds when I could be rather making more puzzle games myself?
Right. Yeah, I feel the same way. I try to optimize what I buy to make it work research. So like we're doing mini games in Dream Settler. Yeah. So I'm like, I'll buy UFO 50. That's like a bunch of mini games and they're mm-hmm. short.
Yeah.
So like I can have time for it. And I bought that game a week ago and I have not opened it yet.
Yep.
Oh yeah. UFO 50 was amazing. It's mm. it's very much a thing where it's like I'm playing it and I started thinking of like, I want to make something like this. I want to make a collection of mm-hmm. imaginary yeah. historical games like this. It speaks to me very much. Also because of some of my like indie game developer friends worked on yeah. it, so I'm extra oh, yeah, kind of fond cool. of the concept. Yeah. But it's like even outside of that, it's a magnificent thing.
Well, now I got
heavily
it.
Recommended.
Extra motivation for Mark.
Yeah, yeah. I really need it.
If you don't play UFO 50 by the end of the year, can you even call yourself a gamer?
Oh, oh, no.
Well, how much interest do I have in calling myself that?
Another good point.
That's our show. You can find RV online at hempily.com/socials. For show notes and additional links from today's conversation, go to our website, nicegames.club. Visit us on Threads at Nice Games Club, where Dale posts about game dev resources and spooky sales. Ooh. Reply, whoa. Whoa, 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 whoa. Reply there on Threads. Thanks, Stephen.
You're welcome.
Reply there on Threads or email us, contact@nicegames.club. We are also on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff, including ad-free episodes. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. And if you want to keep things more casual, just stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello.
So, until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
Conquer the world. But yeah, sorry, you were going to ask something.
Oh, it was not relevant or important. So whoever's editing this just cut out my attempt to ask whatever it was because I forgot.
That's right.